You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 113 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this morning by Hannah. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And we are going to talk about your son, Oliver, and his diagnosis of Hirschsprung's disease.
Yep.
Only a matter of months ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you like to start, I guess, from wherever you want to?
So, well, probably the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
During my pregnancy with Oliver, it was not plain sailing at all. We had quite a few issues during the pregnancy. It was a high risk pregnancy, so we were already on edge anyway. And then he was born premature, was slightly premature, 36 weeks. Was assessed by the neonatal team, was absolutely fine, passed all of his baby checks, everything. We were discharged 48 hours after C-section. Thought everything was fine. He passed meconium in the hospital. Everything was plain sailing. Went home. Fast forward 8 days. He was distended, but we didn't realise because that's how he was from birth, just how his tummy was. Wasn't hard, was still quite soft, but was, now looking back, it was distended. The community midwife that was coming out to review us, she was umming and ahhing because I said he was still only passing meconium. So his poo hadn't changed to the, you know, greeny, yellowy sort of colour. She wasn't worried because he was passing something. He was still tolerating his feeds. He hadn't been sick. There was no issues as such. But she thought it was best that she spoke to the hospital just to see what their thoughts were. So we ended up going back to the hospital where I had him. They assessed him, did an x-ray on his abdomen and said they thought he'd got a twisted bowel. Had to stop his milk feeds. They put cannula in, so he was on IV fluids. What do you think? What happened then?
It's a lot to process, isn't it?
It was a lot. Then another doctor came in and had another look, and she said she thought Oliver had a imperforated anus. So within 10 minutes, we've had two different medical opinions, two different things going on. And I said at that point, but he's obviously had in the hospital when they're born, they have their head to toe checks. Surely if there was something like that, wouldn't that have been picked up in the hospital? And the way she explained it to me was because he was premature and he was very small born, his bum basically was tiny. So she said it is there, but in her medical opinion, it wasn't as formed as it was supposed to be. She said it could have just been missed, unfortunately. So we were sort of under the impression he'd either got a twisted bowel or something wrong with his bum wasn't formed, basically. She then, because it wasn't a specialist hospital, she then phoned through to Birmingham Children's Hospital. And they accepted the referral as such to see Oliver. So we ended up then they cut an NG tube in, before this. And he started vomiting and it was green bile. This is while we were in the hospital. They then put a tube in to drain anything that was coming out of his tummy. Because of this, then they thought he's definitely got some kind of blockage. There's definitely something more serious going on. We ended up being blue lighted in an ambulance from the one hospital, to Birmingham Children's Hospital. When they were sending us into the ambulance, they said, the surgeons are there waiting for you. And I was like, what? Surgeons? Like, obviously my baby's 8 days old at this point. I don't think I fully understood when they said he's either got a twisted bowel or what sort of was going to have to happen. But hearing them say he may need surgery, they're waiting for you, automatically was just alarm bells were ringing. Me and Oliver's dad were just all over the place. He's very calm and very chilled about things, but even he was panicking, obviously, as you do with your baby. So we ended up going there. Surgeons came and saw us. They assessed him and said he didn't have an imperforated anus. So that was one thing ticked off, which I took as a good sign. They reviewed his x-ray as well, and they said that he had enlarged bowel loops, which again, at this point, I didn't know what any of this means. They said his tummy was distended and they needed to do something called a rectal washout. Again, this is all just new to me. I have no idea really what they're talking about. We're doing some bloods on him as well. And they said, well, when's this going to be done? And they said, well, right now. And then they just went and got this equipment, like the catheter, saline, everything you use to do a washout, and just did it on my baby there and then. And we were a bit in shock. I suppose you don't know what we were walking into. I think we just thought maybe he was a bit under the weather, or because he was premature, you know, everything wasn't as formed as a term baby. We were just going to go have a few observations and we'd go home. We didn't think within hours we were going to be blue lighted to a specialist hospital and have treatment started on him. They didn't mention Hirschsprung's disease at this point. They just said, let's just see what happens. Because typically babies with Hirschsprung's disease can't poo at all. But obviously Oliver was pooing somewhat. We were in then for a couple of days. He was still nil by mouth. Carrying on with the washouts. And then the consultant came around and said, I think we should do a biopsy just to rule out Hirschsprung's disease. Went through obviously what Hirschsprung's disease was. He said he didn't see Oliver as the typical symptoms of a Hirschsprung's baby, so he wasn't convinced that's what it was going to be. But he said, you know, you're here, let's just rule everything out. He'd stopped being sick as well at this point. So he was improving, all his observations, everything were fine. They then did the biopsy. And a couple of hours after the biopsy, he started pooing on his own. So the consultant again said the biopsy wouldn't have allowed him to poo on his own. That's not what the intention of the biopsy is, to take the biopsy, not to remove any blockage or anything like that. So the nursing staff, the consultant, we were all like, this is great. You know, like, he's obviously had some kind of a blockage. It's worked its way out. We're on the way home. We're in again still for a few days because he said, you know, I don't want to just send you home just in case. But he was tolerating his milk. Then at this point, there was no sick. He was pooing. Everything was great. So the consultant said, go home. We'll call you with the biopsy results, but I'm not expecting anything really. So we went home. A week had gone by. We were great, you know, no issues. He was gaining weight. He was drinking his milk. Everything was fine. And then I get a call from the hospital saying, well, it wasn't the consultant. It was a different doctor saying, we've had some of the biopsy results back. Not all of them, just some of them, but your consultant would like to discuss them in person with you. And as soon as she said that, my alarm bell started ringing again, and I just thought, if it was nothing, they'd just phone me and say, or send me a letter and say, all clear. So straight away I knew there was something. But when I said, is it, I said on the phone, is it Hirschsprung's disease? And she said, oh, we haven't had the full results back yet. Can you just make your way up to the hospital? So when you'd up going to the hospital, our consultant came in. It was on the night. He'd came in from home, especially to come and talk to us. And I said, just tell me. I said, just tell me what's going on. And he said, yeah, Oliver has got Hirschsprung's disease. He said, I didn't want to get the other doctor to tell you over the phone. He said, I don't think it was the right thing to discuss this kind of thing over the phone. And he wanted to tell us in person, which I thought was really, really nice that, you know, he wanted to sit and let us ask our questions and everything. So again, we were admitted again into the hospital on the surgical neonatal ward. We then had to have our training for washouts because us as parents hadn't had the training before because they were all under the impression we weren't going to need it in the long term. So they gave us a training log, and within 2 days we'd been fully trained on doing washouts at home, irrigations, how to do a flatus tube, what to do if he becomes distended, turned into very medical, very, very quickly. Once we'd been signed off from the training, we then went home awaiting surgery date. Because Oliver was small as well and premature, they said they wanted to wait until he was a little bit bigger to do his surgery.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So yeah, we basically went home with all this medical equipment, had to do washouts twice a day, and were told we'd be contacted by the colorectal team, and then we were just waiting on a surgery date. So this was October time, so he was about a month old at this point. We'd spent more time in the hospital than we had at home. The colorectal team then phoned us, I'd say a couple of days after we were officially discharged, just to say, you know, like, we're your first port of call. We're here on hand if you have any questions, if you need any support. And then they were going to check in with us once a week just to see how we were getting on, doing his washouts, how Oliver was doing. They were updating us on when he was going to have his surgery. We then got a phone call, I think it was the end of October, just a routine to check in from the colorectal team saying that we'd got a surgery date, which was the 1st of December. So we knew it was coming, but for them to actually say, okay, your baby's got to have a general anaesthetic, you know, it's major surgery, he could be in theatre for 8 hours. It was a lot to process, but obviously we knew it needed to be done. So then we were just on the countdown basically for surgery, went for like his pre-op and everything. Then nothing really happened. Obviously we carried on with his washouts. He was fine. Got to surgery date, so 1st of December. He was in theatre for about 6.5 hours, and it was the longest day ever. It was horrible, just waiting around. I mean, the nurse that was looking after me and Kyle, Oliver's dad, he was lovely. He just kept coming in saying, go for a walk. You know, do you want a tea and coffee? Just try and do things to keep us occupied. Which obviously we did, but you still just sat really waiting. Then obviously he came round from the anaesthetic. We went down to recovery to see him. And as soon as he saw us, he started smiling. I mean, he's only 3 months, literally just 3 months at this point, and he's beaming smile. And the anaesthetist said he hasn't smiled. He's just been really straight faced. And then he saw me and his dad's, and he was just beaming smile. So that was nice in like a sad, awful situation. That was nice to see. Then went on to the ward. They explained to us before surgery that, you know, we might need like a central line and might not be able to be fed and might be on a like morphine drip and basically worst case scenarios. Oliver had none of that. He was recovering really well. So we were able to give him a bottle straight away. Tolerated his milk. He had pain relief, but it wasn't on a drip. Didn't have to have a feeding tube, anything. So the nurse on the ward had set everything up and didn't need it. And we were all quite shocked at how well he was doing. We were in the hospital then for 4 days post-surgery. And because he'd recovered that well, they said we could go home, whereas we were supposed to be in for around a week, 10 days. So everything was great at this point. We thought, yeah, he's had his surgery. We're on the up, basically. Go home. Then we had to go back 3 weeks later, which was Christmas Eve, for them to just review how he was getting on, check the join they'd made during his surgery. When they assessed him, the join they felt was too tight. So we then had to try and do dilations, which again, wasn't really prepared for. Wasn't a nice experience really to see. But again, we know it needed doing. When they were doing the dilations, they got to, I think it was size 12, I think it was. And they liked to go up to 15, they said, and they couldn't get up any more than the 12. So we then had to go back the following week, which was New Year's Eve, for them to, for them to try and do it again. So they tried again and said that it felt better, which was obviously positive. But they still weren't overly happy, so wanted to review him again 2 weeks later. So he was pooing and everything on his own at this point. But he was seemed like he was very in pain with it. But they said, obviously, he hasn't been pooing on his own. It almost is like burning him, and he'd get used to it. Then we went for another review, and they said they thought everything was fine, and, you know, we'd just be seen every couple of weeks or so. We'll have phone calls just to see how he was getting on. So we're about middle of January at this point. Oliver stops pooing, starts being sick, becomes distended again. He was very nasally and like congested. So I thought he's just got a cold. He's a bit under the weather. comparing him to my older two children who haven't got Hirschsprung's disease, if it was them, I'd have just said, they're under the weather, you know, they've got a bit of a cold, they'll be okay in a few days. But because of his condition, I thought, no, something is wrong. So we went straight to A&E at the Children's Hospital. Was reviewed again by the surgical team, said he'd got Hirschsprung's enterocolitis, which obviously is an infection. So he again had to stop his milk feeds. We were admitted, IV, fluids, antibiotics, back to doing washouts again. We almost felt like we'd gone 7 steps forward with his surgery and his recovery to then go back again and back to square one almost. So we were in for a couple of days. Then we had to switch. Well, the dietitian came and saw us and switched his formula to a lactose-free formula because they said it's easier for him to digest. He seemed to be tolerating that well. So they let us go home with oral antibiotics, but still doing washouts. We then, about a week later, had a review with his surgeon and the colorectal team. They were happy with how he was recovering, let's say, from his enterocolitis, but they thought that he could do with Botox injections. They said they think his muscles in his bottom are basically in spasm, which is why he stopped pooing. They think he got, because he was poorly as well, that just sort of tipped him over the edge to get enterocolitis. So again, this was a whole other scenario now that we've been told about. And I said, well, how does this work? And then they said it's another general anaesthetic, which again is not as major as his pull-through surgery, but it's still another procedure that he's got to have done. So we've been put on the waiting list for that. So we're waiting for that currently. But we're still doing washouts. And we're having to do a flatus tube to relieve the wind in his belly. Got to carry on with that basically until he has his next procedure. So we sort of went well with recovery, and now I feel like we're back to square one again. But
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sounds so frustrating.
It is.
It sounds like he was making some really, really good progress.
Really good.
And then
dipped.
Enterocolitis hits, which
yeah.
we know that enterocolitis is you do get very susceptible to that if you do have Hirschsprung's. It is one of the things. Were you told to look out for it when he was diagnosed with Hirschsprung's?
We were, but not sort of as alarming as I've realised how it can be. So they did say, obviously, you know, keep an eye out if he gets distended, he starts vomiting, anything like that. But then when we were back in the hospital when he had it, I then realised how severe it can get if it's not treated quickly.
Yeah, and I guess the good thing as well is you did catch it fairly quickly.
Quickly, yeah.
You sort of thought, actually, something's not quite right. Like you said, if it had been any of your older children or anybody without Hirschsprung's, you'd have said, oh, well, they're just a bit sick.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately, Hirschsprung's, you can't be too careful, I guess.
No, you can't. It's a whole different ballgame.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And it's interesting you say, just sort of coming back to the start, that he did pass meconium. And so, but then still presented a lot of the typical symptoms like the vomiting, the green bile and all of that stuff. So it's so difficult because it's not the same for everyone, is it? So this is the really frustrating bit.
It is. It's really, really frustrating. And again, with this, it's not really something that anybody's heard of. I'd never heard of it. And when they said how rare like Hirschsprung's is, obviously you start Googling things, don't you? And then, you know, you see that there is other people that have had it and, you know, just like groups on Facebook and things where other families. But at the time, you just think, what have we done? What has my baby done to be diagnosed with such a rare condition? And there's no reason for it.
No, it's such a strange one, isn't it? Because it is rare, yes. But if the numbers, you know, people, you know, throw around 1 in 5,000 and
yeah,
that's the general sort of accepted term, whether it's a little bit less than that, whether it's more than that, who knows. But the general accepted term. But that's sort of one in every small town, I guess.
Yeah, really.
So it is rare, but it's still, there's still quite a lot of people who just think, you know, UK alone, there's going to be an awful lot of people, especially, what is it, about 150 diagnosed each year or something around that. So there are still a lot of people with it, even though
when it's
mentioned to you, especially if you've got, you know, like me and like yourself, no family history of Hirschsprung's.
No.
I guess it can hit you a little bit like a truck.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, I know, obviously, he's 5 months old now, but he has no clue, really, of any of this that's gone on so far. I mean, obviously, he knows, well, obviously, he's been through it with the surgeries and, you know, us doing the washouts and things, but it's us that's having to deal with it, almost. It's he's none the wiser, really.
No, but that's
which is a good thing, yeah, which is a good thing. I think if it was a older child, like my other two daughters, so she's 5 and 3, they're a lot more knowing. They know everything that's going on. I think it'd be a lot more difficult if it was like one of those, them being diagnosed now, rather than Oliver as a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's one of the plus points, if there is a plus point to it.
Anything you can as a positive, really, don't you?
Absolutely. But I guess that's one of the plus points about when, you know, we are diagnosed with Hirschsprung's. More often than not, and again, it's not not the same in everyone, because I know there are people who have been diagnosed in their 20s with Hirschsprung's. Yeah. So it's not the same for everyone, but a lot of us are diagnosed within the first 48 hours. And I guess that's another point I was going to come to, that I guess Ollie was quite late to be diagnosed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we went in. By the time we had the biopsy results, he was coming up to a month old when he was officially diagnosed.
That's, I mean, if you take sort of your average is 48 hours.
48 hours.
Give or take. So that's quite late, I guess, to be diagnosed. But was it, I know obviously you got the phone call, and when they say coming to the hospital, they're not just coming in for a nice chat, are they?
No.
But was it a relief to go, okay, well, he hasn't got a twisted bowel, he hasn't got any sort of other, because he's got Hirschsprung's. Was that a relief, or was that kind of, oh, no, I don't know what the future holds now?
I think it was a relief in a way, because I knew in my gut something wasn't right. This is going to sound probably really strange, but from the minute I found out I was pregnant with Oliver, I felt something wasn't right with him. Obviously, I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. And obviously, Hirschsprung's is present in the first trimester of pregnancy. So, but obviously, when he was born and they all said, everything's fine, I thought, I know I'm not going crazy. I know there is something not right. But so I think to get some kind of a diagnosis was a relief in a way that I knew to trust my gut and that my gut was right. But I think because we'd been sent home, the hospital was saying, oh no, we don't think it is Hirschsprung's, you know, he's recovering really well. It then felt like we'd been hit by a truck again.
Yeah. And I,
in a way. So it was both a relief and not, if that makes any sense.
That does make absolute sense, yes. I will always, always go with mother's instinct.
Yeah.
I think that's incredibly valuable, not only from my own experience, but also from a lot of people I've spoken to who've just said, I don't know what the problem is, but I know there is one.
Mm.
And I think that's more than enough grounds to, you know, investigate. Now, if you'd said, having never heard of Hirschsprung's, I think it's Hirschsprung's within the first month, then there might be, you know, that might be a bit odd.
Yeah.
But I'll always back mother's instinct.
Yeah.
Always.
I mean, the hospital, when we went in, when he was diagnosed with enterocolitis, the doctor that reviewed him then said, I said, I can just tell there's something's different with my baby. And he said, a mother's instinct is never wrong. He said, obviously, we can't make a clinical diagnosis or, you know, do medical treatment based off an opinion, he said, but we always will take it into consideration.
That's really good to hear. That's really, really good, because I know there have been a lot of people who've had to fight and advocate and say, I know something's wrong, and the doctors or nurses or whoever just say, oh no, everything's fine, or results that we've done have come back, it's fine. But that's, I think, hopefully now hospitals are starting to, again, like you said, not take it as a full-blown medical diagnosis.
No, but realize that you're with your baby all the time. You know them better than anybody else.
Yeah. You know when something's off.
No.
Like, you can't put your finger on it, but you know when something's off. But that's really, really good to hear.
Yeah.
Was that Birmingham?
Really lucky, yeah, Birmingham Children's Hospital. From the minute we went in there, I said I felt, all the staff, they've been, honestly been amazing. Really, we've been really, really lucky. Really lucky.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely brilliant. And especially with it being, you know, as we said, you know, slightly sort of later diagnosis. See, the early diagnosed, the better. But and sort of later diagnosis, that's really, really good to hear that they've taken mother's instinct into consideration as something I'd always have. You mentioned as well, that Oliver is on the waiting list for Botox injections.
Yes.
What would they, for anybody who hasn't kind of come across that before, Because some people with Hirschsprung's have it, some people don't. Just depends on multitude of things. But what would that help him with?
So the way the hospital have explained it is basically it relaxes the muscle to allow him to poo more freely. At the minute, they say it's as if he's in spasm, so he's struggling to fully go to the toilet in a way. So they said this hopefully will relax everything and allow him to not be as sort of tense and just more free.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Because I think there are, so like there are quite a few babies with Hirschsprung's or young children with Hirschsprung's who do have Botox injections. So I think, again, when people mention the word Botox, that can have different connotations of that. Were you sort of aware, did they explain that to you when they said it to you, or did they just say the word Botox and then automatically think like plastic surgery?
I wear my expressions a lot on my face. So I think when they said Botox and I kind of looked like, what are you going on about? I think gauged my face and explained it. Because as soon as they said that, I was like, Botox? What are you talking about? But yeah, they did obviously explain it straight away.
Fantastic. No, that's good as well that, you know, because you can hear the word Botox and you think, you know, something completely different. Yeah. So it's good. And I guess as well, with it being such a complex condition, the need for explanation along the way, I think is really important. I know you said, I know they said, you know, don't Google it. And I think all hospitals say, well, diagnosed with Hirschsprung's, but don't Google it. But I think everyone does.
I mean, they gave me leaflets with, you know, all information about everything like Hirschsprung's disease, rectal washouts, enterocolitis. They gave me every leaflet going, but even I still went on and Googled it.
Yeah. I mean,
but I think that's just a natural reaction to
that. I think it is as well, because I guess at the end of the day, what you want is the knowledge.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power, essentially. So what you want is to be able to know as much as you can know. Definitely. I mean, obviously they say it so that you don't come across, you know, wrong information or horror stories or any of that kind of stuff. But I don't see, and I know why they say it, but I don't see anything wrong with knowing more. Because at the end of the day, you know, you want to do everything you can to help your baby.
Yeah, of course.
And knowing as much as you know, as you can know, I guess is the best way forward.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
But it's, yeah, so I think that's, I know it's difficult not to sit there and Google and find everything out about it, but I think knowing more about the condition is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, I know you mentioned the enterocolitis episode in January, which is actually only a month ago. Everything's moving so fast.
Very fast, I know.
But in terms of how long did that take to kind of get out of his system?
We were in the hospital for 2 or 3 days, and then we carried on with the antibiotics for another week after that. So probably about day 10 by now. Then we were reviewed at the hospital. Probably at about 2 weeks all in all for them to review him again and say, okay, he seems okay. But obviously we're still doing washouts now. So it's as if the infection has gone, but we're still treating it in a way.
Yeah, it's I guess it's one of those where as soon as you have it, you don't necessarily forget it. You just kind of think, right, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that it never comes back. So if we move on to kind of the future.
Yeah.
And I guess it must seem, you know, 5 months ago must seem an absolute lifetime ago.
It does, yeah, it does in a way.
And all the things that you have to learn, and I know I say this a lot, but all the things you have to learn within such a short space of time is unbelievable. But like we were chatting before we started recording, you don't have a choice, I guess.
No, you don't. You have to just do whatever you have to do to help your baby feel better. And you, whether you want to do it or not, that all goes out the window because you have to do it as a parent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on to the future as well.
Yeah.
What is sort of the future, both kind of medically, as far as you know, for Oliver, and sort of non-medically, what do you hope for the future for him?
I mean, well, next month, obviously, we're coming up to weaning him, like starting solids, which I am really anxious about. Obviously, with my girls, it was just, yeah, you know, they were at the age, we'll give them whatever, you know, no issues, whereas we're having to think of what's going to potentially affect his stomach, what's easier to digest, blah, blah, blah. So that's already something like in the short term. But then it's whether, is he going to need like a high fiber diet? Is he going to need laxatives? It's a whole different ball game of thinking of, and that's just the short term. And then we've got to hit potty training stage and him going to school, and medically, I think it's a long road ahead. Obviously, it's just every child, baby with Hirschsprungs is completely different. There's no path as such to say, yes, this is what's going to happen. It's kind of just how your baby reacts and copes with it. I hope he can lead sort of as normal life as such, like, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, a lot of us do. A lot of us, you know, a lot of people, a lot of adults I've spoken to, and again, I know you say, and you're absolutely right when you say everybody's different.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of adults I've spoken to who, and myself included, where you would look at us or walk past us and you wouldn't have a clue. You wouldn't have a clue that we have, you know, 30 million scars.
Yeah.
Or that we have Hirschsprungs, or that we have had any surgery, you know, whatsoever. So, I mean, that is
reassuring.
It is very much possible, you know, and like I've spoken to many people who have not just gone on to lead sort of normal, I know that word normal, yeah, lives, but have also achieved, you know, amazing things as well. So I think it's, you know, it's one of those conditions where everybody is different, but there are people out there with it who have done amazing things. So I really hope the very best for you and Oliver, both sort of both in the short term, obviously with hospital appointments and whatnot, but yeah, and definitely in the long term as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.